Why do more media professionals read iwantmedia.com? iwantmedia.com features reports from industry leaders and media personalities. iwantmedia.com gives you quick access to news, stats, trade orgs, and industry publications, and it's updated daily. Forbes says iwantmedia.com contains everything media professionals need to stay ahead of the game. The Washington Post calls it the source for the serious media geek. Do you get it? If you don't, you should. To sign up for free daily email alerts, visit iwantmedia.com.
Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe.
You know, it is just so neat that you happened by today here at The Advertising Show with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe, being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show is a copyrighted Big Radio Midgets production. As with each week, we have incredible guests, and this week is no exception. Jonathan Baskin is our special guest out of Chicago. Jonathan, including dimbulb.net, his blog, is North American director at Future Lab, and we'll tell you more about Jonathan, who's been called a merry iconoclast. And I understand there are some neighborhoods you do not want to use those terms. He's lucid and cutting. That sounds like a surgeon. And groundbreaking. Yeah, it sounds like he builds things. But the new bad boy of branding is what they're saying. So we'll tell you more about Jonathan, and you'll learn more about his company as well. Jeremy Kent is with us today, too, as well, here at the Advertising Show. He's our European correspondent. And he is basically talking about some budget cutbacks in Europe for broadcast, because apparently the media folks there spend a lot of money, the government media folks, you know, for the army advertising, for how to fill out your income tax forms advertising. But apparently they're cutting back big time in budgets and such. He's going to talk about that as well. And I get a kick out of Jeremy and his accent. And yes, you do have an accent, Jeremy. I'm sorry. We don't. Taco Bell is coming to is coming to Europe, and on behalf of all the folks who really enjoy Mexican food, we'd like to send our sincerest apologies along before it arrives.
Yeah,
I mean Taco Bell, it's good. I shouldn't say anything bad about Taco Bell, but Jeremy has a kind of a unique way of saying Taco Bell. So when we hear the report, I want you to listen carefully for that, and then you can send Jeremy an email correcting him on how to say Taco Bell.
If you're with Yum Brands, that's Jeremy Kent at, well, we'll give him your email address here later. Right?
But anyway, we love what Jeremy has to say. And also Jonathan Baskin coming our way here momentarily. What are you taking a look at there? What is that?
Yeah, you know, Ray, CNN's Larry King, I don't know if you've been watching him or not, 25th anniversary of being on CNN. The guy's been doing interviews, you know, what, 50, 60 years.
At least seven or eight marriages. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he does a hell of a job. He gets fantastic guests. But yet somebody needs to tell him he's dressing like he's a gangster from the 40s. Have you noticed that?
He only has one uniform like Jack Webb did.
Well, he's got the black shirts and the white silk tie. Every once in a while he'll, you know, those suspenders, of course, that's a signature for him. But this attire that he's wearing, sometimes it's like he's looking like he's trying to be a gangster. But anyway, enough on Larry. I wanted to mention to you, did you check out the ABC Friday night coverage about three Fridays ago of the National Spelling Bee? Did you see that?
No, I sure didn't, Brad, and I'm so sorry I missed that.
Well, I got to tell you, once you see it, you say to yourself, I used to see little snippets of this when they would hold the event on the news the following week. What in the world is the ABC television network doing, airing the entire thing in prime time? It just seemed odd. I mean, are they that hard up for programming?
One would suggest that, yes, they are hard up for programming, I guess. You know, what's happened to the major networks just blows my mind. I was watching golf a couple of weekends ago, and they ran out of time because the tournament was running late. This is at the Jack's tournament in Columbus, outside of Columbus, Ohio. And I was able to switch over immediately to, with a click of a channel thing, to the golf channel. And they picked up and kept the golf tournament going, which is really cool. So I don't get it. And they left the golf tournament so they could run an infomercial on something. Don't do that.
Probably will make more money for a 30-minute block.
Sure, they're going to make more money.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But still, from an integrity standpoint and cohesivity standpoint,
it's not good for the brand.
It's like a small-town little TV station turning off the transmitter and playing the national anthem or something in the middle of a finale of MASH or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, although with that said, Super Bowl is doing well. This is Fox's Super Bowl, by the way. 2.8 million to 3 million for a 30-second spot. At this particular point in time, Super Bowl 2011 is 80% sold out. You know, those spots are going quickly. They're pacing well ahead of 2010 CBS, which sold 70% of the ads by September of 2009. It is on track to sell out faster than the last time it aired the game in 2008. So
it's encouraging.
Well, it is, and I think what it says, it makes a statement. It says, you know, let's give it a shot. Things are looking better than they used to. So I think it's a grand idea. The iPhone, the new iPhone launch was kind of comical. Basically, as Apple was offering the phone, Steve couldn't get any internet access and asked the Wi-Fi folks to please get off the network so he could get on. That was kind of odd, but we'll see what happens. iPhone is it's iPhone 4, faster, thinner than previous models, with a crisper display, and he showed that, and more angular look. It has 5-megapixel camera. It can shoot and edit high definition video as well. So I'm sure those folks who own the iPhones are like going, I would like one right now. It's only $199, by the way.
Hey, you know, Ray, as a reality check, Steve Jobs came back to the company and has done fantastic things. 10 years ago, Apple was on the brink of bankruptcy. They were, 60, 90 days from folding, and Jobs was not running the company. He came back to the company, and for our younger listeners, yes, Apple was, walking on thin ice and almost a part of history. And look at where they are today and what Steve Jobs, the innovator he is, has done in turning not only that company around, but it's so well known for, innovation and brand, that the brand and innovation go hand in hand. And they've done such a great job not only with the iPhone and iTunes, but the iPad now. And, I mean, it's just such a success story.
It's exciting to watch what happens there, and no doubt about it. Even with the little fiasco that they had a few weeks ago with the stolen iPhone, it's like that was a little bit overblown and a little bit stupid, and we all know it was planned that way, okay? You won't hear anything more about it. Jeremy Kent here is now talking about media budget cuts for the UK government. And remember what I said about Taco Bell. Listen to this report with Jeremy.
Hello, I'm Jeremy Kent, and welcome to the European News Desk. Coming up, new UK government slashes ad spend, government advisors want to ban alcohol ads, and Taco Bell arrives in the UK. The new UK government promised to cut the burgeoning budget deficit, and after just a few weeks in office, government advertising is set to fall by as much as 50%. Under the outgoing Labour government, the Central Office of Information became the UK's largest advertiser, spending nearly $790 million in the last financial year. The COI has told agencies that cuts in spending will have an immediate impact and that plans are already in place to save in excess of $230 million. As the new coalition government takes a more detailed look at expenditure, further cuts can be expected. It is unclear which campaigns will be affected, but the new government has repeated a commitment to continue with essential advertising. So campaigns such as recruitment for the military, anti-drink driving and tax return filing will continue. What we don't know is how much new creative work will be commissioned or where the axe will fall on media budgets. Just as the UK government reduces the amount of public money spent on advertising, the National Institute for Clinical Excellence has called for a complete ban on alcohol advertising in an effort to curb underage and binge drinking. NICE, which has a similar role to the FDA in the United States, claims that there is evidence that alcohol advertising does affect children and young people. It goes on to claim that one in four adults is drinking what it calls a dangerous amount of alcohol and costing the National Health Service around $3.4 billion every year. Voices of opposition can be heard from ISBA, which claims that NICE has not acknowledged a degree of stringent legislation already in place and the Advertising Standards Authority, which points out that much of NICE's concerns are already covered by existing regulation and that banning advertising is not going to stop people from eating and drinking too much. As the UK starts to pay back its debt and ushers in a new era of austerity, we might also be entering a new Puritan period. Already, the moves against the drink industry are echoing those against the tobacco industry from just a few years ago. Smoking was once commonplace and part of the national culture. Two generations ago, no one would have foreseen its demise. Today, no one would make an argument for a return to tobacco advertising. God forbid the drinks industry suffers the same fate. The food industry is another one often in the sights of healthcare campaigners, but this hasn't stopped Taco Bell announcing that it will launch in the UK this month. Taco Bell believes it will fill a gap in the market and compete head-on with McDonald's on price. Currently, there are no national Tex-Mex fast service brands operating at a national level in the UK, and there is a real opportunity here for Taco Bell. I wish them luck. This is Jeremy Kent in London for The Advertising Show.
Thank you, Jeremy Kent, here at The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. Jonathan Baskin is our very special guest out of Chicago. As we said before, he's been called a merry iconoclast. Among other things, Jonathan wears multiple hats as a global brand strategist, leading a global network of partner companies in the Baskin Brand Alliance, and manages North American business for the global marketing consultancy Future Lab. Also a writer, oft-quoted media expert, and public speaker, having written the groundbreaking book Branding Only Works on Cattle in 2008, then Bright Lights and Dim Bulbs in 2009. He writes a very, very popular blog that you're probably aware of. It's dimbulb.net. And we bring Jonathan to the show with a lot of anticipation of a good conversation, and we'll possibly even learn some more stuff there, too, as well. He can't be all bad. He began his career at Gray Advertising, which we all have an affinity for as well. So, Jonathan, it is so nice to have you here at The Advertising Show. Welcome.
Ray, thank you very much. And Brad, I want to build on something you just said a little while ago about Apple 10 years ago. I actually was a part of the executive committee at Apple when we launched the first iMac. And it was a thrilling experience, and I did my 2 cents worth. I'm not claiming to have been any great visionary, but I was a part of that team. And my brilliant marketing insight was, iMac, one trick pony. I don't see a future. And I moved on. So just in terms of my humility here, I'm not always right.
was Steve Jobs around the table, and did you answer to him, or who did?
Yeah, I worked at Edelman PR at the time, and so I ran the agency team, and we actually had a 5-hour weekly executive marketing team meeting with Steve and Lee Clow and a couple of the other, Phil Schiller, a couple of the other senior folks at Apple. So I don't think he could pick me out of a lineup, even the minute after I walked out of the room. But I spent about 9 months working on the iMac launch, and the first Sherlock was the search tool. And you're right, though; those were different times for Apple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Lee Clow, for those that may not know, a creative genius out of Shiat Day. Is that right, Shiat Day?
Yeah. Yep, that's right. He looks like Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I always thought he looked like the founder of the Muppets myself.
So you're saying you're going to get in trouble just like they did on the
he does
South
resemble
Park.
Him. Yeah. You know, we came to know Jonathan through a CMO article out of Ad Age entitled Don't Have Plans Yet for Holiday Selling Season, You're in Trouble. And we're going to talk a little bit about that in a minute, Jonathan. But before we do that, The Advertising Show is on Facebook, and we're also on Twitter at The Ad Show for those that are interested in following us. And I'm curious, just to get your take, has social media technology made for a better conversation these days, Jonathan, or just more conversation?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think I would err on the side of more different, varied, and at times purposeless. I think social media generally is an amazing technology in search of meaning and purpose. And I'm not certain we've really cracked the code yet on it. I think we've found a lot of fun ways to occupy people's time and do entertaining things with it. But ultimately, the major drivers of social media and usage have nothing to do with marketing or with the messages that we marketers and brand folks want people to consume. So we've really yet to crack the code on that mechanism of socialness that is enabled by the technology. But I do think that there is an immense opportunity to do it. I just don't think anybody knows how.
So do you tweet, Jonathan? And did you notice how I kept my question within 140 characters?
And mine was distinctly longer. Sorry.
Well, you blog. That's different. You're allowed to do that, right? That's
yeah, but so, blogging is still last decade.
True.
Do you tweet, Jonathan?
I really don't. I send out a tweet when I post on my blog or when my Ad Age column runs. But I, to brutal honesty, I can't really figure out why.
Yeah.
Why to do it? I personally not cracked the code on why I need to do it.
You and a million other people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I mean, there are legitimate reasons, and companies can use it legitimately and meaningfully. And I think the advertising show can do that in telling people who upcoming guests are, or allow our followers to ask questions of upcoming guests. And yet I agree with you. There are many out there that use it for no other reason than, well, you just have to scratch your head and figure it out, I suppose. Let's get into the CMO strategy article entitled, and I just love this title, "Don't Have Plans for Holiday Season Selling Season Yet? Well, You May Be in Trouble." So to start it off, Jonathan, the holiday season is, you say, but a calendar entry that no longer guarantees consumers will show up and buy. So are you saying that for those companies out there that are usually expecting a spike in sales during the holiday seasons that they've become accustomed to, that this for sure spike is something that will be a part of the past and never come again?
Well, I don't know if I tend to talk in extremes sometimes just because it's entertaining to me, but I don't think seasonality disappears. There is a objective reality called the calendar and weather, and you know those things occur irrespective of whether or not we acknowledge them. But I don't think that they play the same role in terms of teeing up and pre-qualifying consumers the way they used to. I mean, there's the fact that I can buy stuff, we can buy stuff on the internet now, anytime, any place, for whatever reason we want, kind of blows up that model of I'm going to wait until November and go into, or October and go into a store to try to find what I need.
Sure.
So it's some of the mechanics that I think we took for granted as marketers are not necessarily automatic any longer. That's not to say that people still don't show up. I mean, there's a gift-giving moment either 8 nights for Hanukkah or, you know, whatever on Christmas morning, but how consumers get to those moments, those gift-giving moments, I think is less to do with the season that we used to call the holidays and is probably a year-long opportunity for marketers.
Because of the
technology we have to communicate with consumers and deliver products and services to them.
So. That's an outstanding point. Consumer shopping and buying patterns have changed because of technology, but yet I don't think that marketers have necessarily taken notice of that. Certainly we hear every year about the growing number of people that buy Christmas gifts during the holidays. Of course, as you say, maybe that needs to be broadened out beyond just Thanksgiving to Christmas and post-Christmas to New Year's.
Think about it. It's
staying
really
with the article for
a
moment,
drama,
Jonathan.
Right? The price, we know that retailers are going to charge us through the nose those couple months leading up to Christmas, and then starting January 1, all the stuff we bought will be available at half price in the stores.
But of course.
Yeah.
We all know that. And we've been prisoners to that because the mechanisms of product delivery and service and didn't allow us to work around. Well, the internet's blown that up. And combine that also with the ongoing relationship to your question earlier, Brad, about the opportunity for social media. How do you presume to have a conversation with your consumer, whether it's via Twitter or Facebook or anything else, during the year, and then come about October, screw them? With pricing or limited availability, consumers are keeping score. They're keeping track now. So I think it was funny, as I just read it, and you guys probably saw it too, I think it was last week, and I wrote about this actually, early June, the Gap is hunting for their holiday ad agency. It's June, and they're hunting for their holiday ad agency.
Boy, are they ahead of the game or what, right? Okay, that's absolutely wrong, but that's okay. Here in Houston, it's 100 degrees outside here in the month of June. It's Jonathan. We're going to take a break here for 1 minute, Jonathan. Jonathan Baskin is our special guest. North American Director at Future Lab. The blogger, too, dimbulb.net is the blog site there as well. Ray Shillings and Brent Forsyth on The Advertising Show. You want more? We'll give you some more here in just a moment. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth.
Hello, boys and girls. It's me, the Frito Bandido. You know what I heard about you? I heard you want to be a Frito Bandido like me. You do? Then you must sing the Bandido
song. Ray and Brad with The Advertising Show, and our very special guest out of Chicago is Jonathan Baskin. 27 years of experience driving customer purchases, building strong brands, and having led a number of marketing initiatives across both digital and offline domains for such world-class brands as Apple. We talked about that. Blockbuster, ConAgra, and other leaders in the brand name alphabet, so to speak, or letters, I should say, as well. With Ray and Brad on The Advertising Show, Jonathan, welcome back. You know, you're talking about Christmas in June or whatever. This was an accident. This was not on purpose. We're sitting in a Mexican restaurant last week, and they are playing Mexican Christmas tunes on the overhead music. And it's like, shouldn't somebody tell them to change that? If you can imagine, the Mexican version of Chip Davis and the Mannheim Steamroller in June. It just didn't make a lot of sense. But welcome back to the show, Jonathan.
Yeah, Jose Feliciano, we don't need you doing Feliz Navidad.
Not yet.
You know, staying with the article for a moment, Jonathan, you lay out several tips to get companies thinking about marketing for the holiday season now, and some of those that you mentioned in the article are nix the funny video or email campaign, think social now, make service a lead gen activity, anticipate the rush, and finally plan for the day after. Let's go back to the first one, nix the funny video or email campaign. So for those that maybe thinking about doing that again this year, you say, put down the mouse, don't do that.
Yeah, it's like, don't go toward the light. I don't think the world needs another dancing elf or all the permutations thereof. I think smart guys, men and women, have proven their capacity to pleasantly waste people's time. I think that's great, and I've elfed myself and elfed my friends, and as I'm talking to you right now, I can't tell you the brand name attached to that campaign.
Right.
So at some point pretty early on in the equation, and you're right, in the article I'm saying, I ask the question now, what are we trying to accomplish? Because if the answer is pleasantly waste people's time, there are many very creative ways to do that. But to me, it seems like the strategy for any holiday retailer trying to make money over the holidays is, how the hell do I sell stuff?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, there'll always be a digital agency that'll happily take your money to do funny stuff. But I think come the holidays, especially, as we were talking earlier, now let's what was the traditional period? Was it the day after Thanksgiving, pretty much Black Friday, and then you really have that kind of baton death march to Christmas morning for selling stuff. At that point, it's a shooting war. And I can't understand why any brand name, large or small, consumer, service, product, you name it, why they would be spending a penny of their money trying to be funny or entertaining at that point.
Yeah.
It really, at that point, it is do or die. And I think that what we I kind of thought we would have already seen more of this, but we haven't, because I think we're still feeling around with the whole social space. But we should start judging the businesses and the efficacy of their marketing based on the direct correlation to sales, especially during the holiday season.
Yeah, it's showtime as of Thanksgiving. It's not time to be screwing around trying to be funny. You know, one of your points that you make about the tips for companies about marketing for the holiday season that really got my attention, made me, the others, the social, think social now, anticipate the rush, plan for the day after, that I think we could all speculate on what you mean by those points, but the one that really got my attention was make service a lead gen activity. And I thought, now how in the world do you do that?
Yeah, well, the short answer is I have no idea. And that's the honest answer, it's the kind of question I would love to see more businesses ask themselves.
Yeah.
But let me give you a for instance. We do a lot of time now, when I'm writing for Ad Age, so my contemporaries there, will happily write about how social tools like Twitter are a great mechanism for capturing customer complaints. Matter of fact, I've had problems with my cable provider and had people tell me, well, tweet it and you'll get a call. Sure enough, I did. Wow. To me, that's not customer service, because to me, that's putting out a fire that shouldn't have been burning in the first place. And for every person who's motivated to post a problem on Twitter, there's however many handful or dozens or hundreds of thousands who either have some lesser degree of problem or a greater problem that they're enduring, or for that matter, are not even thinking about your business or brand. They're just blithely going along using the product or service and thinking nothing of it. Why is customer service a problem-fixing function instead of a experience-enhancing function? So instead of waiting for something to break, mm-hmm. why couldn't your holiday strategy right now be to outreach to your consumers to make sure they're having one hell of a good time with what you sold them?
Mm-hmm.
And instead of waiting for, as a matter of fact, interestingly enough, I got a call a couple days ago from my bank. This is a perfect example. Called me up and said, you're probably thinking of refinancing. We want to make sure we don't lose your business. Here's our rate. We'll rush you through the process. We'll support you. What do you think? Well, interestingly enough, I hadn't even been thinking about refinancing.
Sure.
But when they mentioned it, I was like, thank you. Thank you for preemptively offering me that benefit instead of waiting for me to call and say, can you beat this rate? You know, it's a different conversation when there's a problem.
Yeah.
You know, and think of right now. Think of how many cell phone users are getting, excuse the French, crapped upon by their service plans.
Sure.
Because Verizon and AT&T don't pick up the phone, ha 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 ha, and call their customer and say, guess what? Before you trip over this problem, we want to make it better for you.
Years ago, Verizon had I had a problem with my phone, and I've been a Verizon customer since it was GTE. I think you have as well, Brad, with back in the 80s. And I had been paying for voicemail service or something like that. It was like $5 a month or whatever. So it goes unnoticed over the period of time. But I asked upon one renewal. I said, so you don't charge for voicemail anymore? And they said, no, we don't. I said, well, then you owe me a refund. And they went ahead and
they said they hadn't charged for years, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, no, you're going to pay me what you owe me. And you're absolutely right. And what a great example of the bank as well to come forward and say, listen, we've already got this figured out. We know you might be interested, so let's talk about it. And what a great way to engage. I love that. We've got Jonathan Baskin, our special guest, who is the North American Director at Future Lab. Also, the blog that is very popular, and you may be on it already, it's called dimbulb.net. We've got the continuation of our conversation with Jonathan here coming up right now on The Advertising Show. Back as promised, it's Ray Shillings and Brad Forsythe with The Advertising Show. Out of Chicago this weekend, our special guest is Jonathan Baskin, North American Director at Future Lab, and also the popular blog dimbulb.net. Jonathan, welcome back. It is a pleasure to have you here today.
Thanks, Ray. I'm enjoying the conversation.
Great.
Well, we can tell that, and we are as well. Jonathan, Twitter played an important role in helping marketers gauge consumer response to Super Bowl ads this past year. It used to be, you know, just enough to get you to the website. Now social media is coming into play. Jonathan, how should advertisers use social media channels to connect with consumers? And, for example, let's just stay with the upcoming holiday season.
Yeah, it's a great question, and there's no one-size-fits-all strategy, obviously, but I think a general focus or strategy, if you will, would be think less about Twitter or about Facebook and any other technology platforms per se, and look at the very advertising budget entirely as a social function. Because arguably, every time you run an ad, you're having a conversation with the customer. It stinks, and they may not be answering or telling you back what you want them to tell you, but everything you do is social. So in terms of prepping for the holiday, to me it seems to be that the challenge would be to take that budget and take that creative and figure out how the bits and pieces of your budget, your artifacts of marketing, whether they're ads, whether they're, for that matter, publicity releases, whether they're 140 character tweets, whether they're posts on your Facebook page, what have you, and look at it as all parts of an integrated conversation with your customer. Because they're really, I think, if anything, one of the big picture things that I think we're going to see happening over the next couple of years is that this idea that there's social media separate from media is going to go away. Just like digital media and other media, the lines are getting blurred there too. You're seeing some of the big agencies, in fact, folding their digital shops back into the fold mm-hmm. with the rest of the organization because the distinction is kind of arbitrary. You know, so to your point, you know, Brad, when you use a tweets to gauge the efficacy or retention on a TV spot, so what part of that is digital and what part of that isn't digital, and who cares?
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Yeah.
Yeah, and I thought the same was true when, you know, you delivered a certain number of visitors to your website in years past with a Super Bowl spot. If that's all you were trying to do, then, you know, pat yourself on the back. But hopefully there was a transaction somewhere in that process, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that is really the aha. And if you will, that's the lodestone, the lingua franca, the fractal, whatever the hell you want to call it. The ultimate goal here is to sell stuff. This is the stuff that, you know, David Ogilvy, you know, I try to channel him whenever I can. You know, that's the business we're in, which is transacting merchandise out of our warehouses, you know, digital or real, into people's hands and their homes or offices. So, you know, ultimately that's the measure of any of these campaigns. So even, you know, do I want to find out, whether I find out via tweets or focus groups, if you liked or remembered or respected my ad, there's still, I'm kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop, the kind of the ba-boom. It's, okay, comma, and when are you going to buy it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. You know, Ray and I have talked so much about this over the years, and I wanted to get your take on this. So often we see marketers who use the holiday season as strategy, frequently creating a totally separate and distinct campaign for the holidays, and then they just air it for a few months, and then they either go back to what they were doing before or use it as an excuse to create a whole new campaign for the new year. But yet you say, Jonathan, you don't have to have a holiday 2010 strategy that's separate from your entire year of 2010 strategy. Explain what you mean by that.
Well, I'd actually offer up perhaps even the idea of there being a distinctly different holiday strategy is, in fact, counterproductive, because it almost begs the question of why did you wait till when the time, this is now me as a consumer talking, why did you wait until the time when you knew I had to buy something to come up with something to spin me and charge me for, versus, again, the whole premise behind the social function is that you have an ongoing relationship with your customer. Well, we always did, whether we had social technology or the internet or television. I mean, before any of that, businesses always had relationships with their customers. The problem with the approach to sort of the distinct holiday approach is that it disregards the other 9 months of that conversation and says, Yeah. What we were telling you back in August, not so much important. And now we want to tell you this. And that kind of violates this idea that we're really in a collaborative arrangement with our customers. So to me, I think that the opportunity is to how do you build that consistency, that reliability, that, if you will, that authenticity that says, hello, customer, I'm that brand that you've been talking to since February. And like I said back then, I wanted to help you have a great holiday. I'm not proposing this as creative necessarily, but you know, that I'm here for you, and I want your business. And like we've been talking about for the past year, this is what I got for you.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously we got to sex it up. We have to make it passionate and meaningful and funny and hilarious and whatever else. But to me, that's one of the challenges posed to us by the conversation that we have with our customers now. We can't pretend like there are these discrete periods where we can just sort of be a different business. We're the business, and there's the conversation, and it doesn't stop.
Automotive industry, are you listening?
Oh, gosh, don't get me started.
Yeah. as we wrap this up, Jonathan, and by the way, Dimbulb, dimbulb.net is your blog. I'm sure we'll mention that again later. You're a man for all seasons. You wear several hats, as Ray mentioned. I want to get your take on what we can learn from the BP disaster. Many companies are rethinking their crisis plans, I would imagine, as a result of what we're seeing continue to roll out with regard to BP. We saw Tiger Woods not being handled very well in terms of his thoughts on how to handle his crisis. Now we've got a a much bigger issue with BP that's going to impact millions, if not billions, of dollars for the poor folks that make a living along the Gulf Coast. So what can we learn from a marketing standpoint or maybe from a crisis management standpoint from BP?
Yeah, I've been thinking about this a lot. So the punchline, I think, on the BP disaster is really actually old school crisis communications and old school marketing, which is if you have bad news, get it out early and get it out completely. Because what we're watching now is BP suffer a slow death because the lawyers and the marketing strategists all sort of conspired to try to lowball the enormity of the crisis and are in a constant, it's sort of like Napoleon, you know, gets a third of the way into Russia and then goes, oops, and then the entire rest of the campaign is slowly kind of backtracking back through the snow trying to get out alive. That's the maneuver BP's in. Now imagine a different world where as soon as the spill happened, Tony Hayward was on television saying, this is a national crisis. I'm asking for an appointment with the president. I want to lay out the call to other oil companies to join us. We've created a social media tool to let interested Americans volunteer to get involved. We need to react to this as if a meteorite has hit the planet and we're in potential Armageddon state. I don't know how they could have gotten that through their lawyers, but had they done that, the news would have been all about how things weren't as bad as we thought. Instead, it's the exact opposite, and it's just they're getting killed by not small cuts, but big cuts over and over and over again. So I think, again, the lesson is get ahead of things with full disclosure, and more importantly, give people something that they can do to help fix it. Because the worst thing for BP now is that they have, how many Americans are there? 300, however many million, are watching TV as fellow victims of this spill. Versus there being ways for us to actually actively get involved to help fix it.
Could have saved a ton on the advertising, the $25 million that they gave radio to say, it's not that bad. And the other part is, come on down. Our beach is a little bit oily, but you know, what the heck. And the other one was the fact that he's running that ad over and over and over again. Too bad they didn't do a couple of takes of that ad to make it sound a little bit more realistic. It would be better to put a cam on Tony and have him track his whereabouts and what he's up to. In terms of cleaning up the mess that they have created.
I want my life back.
Yeah, right. You can get your life back in your next life, pal. Yeah. Jonathan, we're out of time, but I want to say thanks. And also, obviously, you can read his regular column in Advertising Age on marketing leadership. Of course, join the blog, dimbulb.net, or just find out more about Jonathan at the North American Director at Future Lab as well. But what a great... What a great opportunity to meet you and talk to you here at the Advertising Show. It has certainly been a pleasure.
Yeah, for me too, guys. I really appreciate it. So thank you very much.
We love the upbeat attitude. Consider yourself running for president next time. Be a good idea.
You got it.
Not a bad idea.
My mom and the two of you, I got three votes.
You got it. Well, I think Brad's in too, so that's fine. We are going to take a break and come back with more on the Advertising Show. You bet. Stay right here. Our thanks again to Jonathan Baskin, our special guest today, North American Director of Future Lab, and don't forget the blog, dimbulb.net. Great interview as well. Congratulations to good old David Beckham once again has scored, and this is not necessarily on the soccer field. He's now the brand ambassador and ahead of the World Cup tournament. In a move to draw more users to online media company products, he's the brand ambassador of Yahoo. They've employed him to do that as well. So this is interesting. I don't know. Beckham has been in and out of the sponsorship arena, but I'm sure he's making a pretty penny here as far as the World Cup goes too as well.
Well, I mean, what's the relevance of him being spokesperson for Yahoo? I don't get that, but, you know.
Well, I don't know. Maybe just sexy enough, but, but obviously quite popular. I mean, who else in that arena would be of his caliber? But you've got a good point. I don't know. That's a good question to ask as well. But anyway, now David has a new income source. Thanks to Yahoo.
He needs more money.
Yeah, like we do. Yeah, exactly. But thanks again, Jonathan. Join us next week, too, as well, and we'll get back here together. The Advertising Show, by the way, didn't get a chance to mention Ed Schiphol and his crew, the folks at Schiphol.com, that's S-C-H-I-P-U-L, that power the program and have for several years now with a platform called Tendency. It's a marketing platform, so check it out at Schiphol.com. Tell your friends about the Advertising Show. Don't forget about the Twitter and all the other good stuff that we do on Facebook as well, too. It's worthy of checking out. The Advertising Show, being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth. The Advertising Show is a copyrighted Big Radio Midgets production.
Under pressure? Get creative concepts fast. Run a global pitch on openad.net and gain access to a global brain trust of nearly 11,000 advertising and marketing creators from 125 countries. Simply take 15 minutes to fill out our online brief form and we'll take care of the rest. From world-class agencies to the best independents to the brightest freelancers, openad.net global creatives can deliver creative concepts direct to your desktop in a matter of days. Why not save time, energy, and money by quickly sourcing concepts from the world's brightest creative minds? Visit openad.net and see how we're revolutionizing the way ideas are created and traded. It's simple, it's fast, and it's global. Openad.net, the smarter way to create your advertising from the freshest creative minds on the planet. Visit openad.net today to find out more.